Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson and former Commanders beat reporter Craig Hoffman.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. It is the Take Command podcast. Craig Hoffman, Logan Paulson. It's late in the season, Logan. We're both battling. We're fighting through. So if the voices sound a little scraggly, we apologize, but you know we're gonna do our best to answer your mailbag questions today.
I was gonna say you actually sound pretty good.
Relatively speaking, you sound like you're fighting. So
what's funny is I feel great though. You know, feel amazing.
See, I sound okay and don't feel great. So you know, put us together, and you have one really great human. You also on the other side have someone who's dead. All right, so let's get into it. You submitted your questions all kinds of ways. We had a couple that came through via email, thanks to HoffmanShow.com's contact page. We had a couple that came through on Instagram at Hoffman.sports and at Logan_Paulson82. And then we also had some that I put out the APB, if you will, on Blue Sky, and some folks chimed in there. So we're actually going to start with one. There's a bunch of offseason questions that I thought was interesting. It's like, hey, this team's in the thick of the playoff race, so what are they going to do after this season? We'll get there. But let's start off with the ones in season. And JVA asks, Wiley or Lucas? Very simple. This prompt for questions came pretty close after that Tennessee game where they ran like crazy with Cornelius Lucas in at right tackle. Now, Andrew Wiley, as we record this on Tuesday, he practiced on Monday and should be good to go this week. He is the starter, but would there be any, upside? Would there be any merit to Cornelius Lucas actually staying at right tackle?
You know, I don't personally think so. I think Lucas might be a better pass protector long term. You know, I think he's just got the length, he's got the frame, he's got all the things you're looking for when you want when you're kind of looking for those pass protector guys. But in terms of how Wiley's played this year, I think he 100% deserves an opportunity to play more and has earned that starting opportunity. Now, is that for the foreseeable future? Is that for 5 years down the road? I don't know, but I will say for this year, when you look at him play, when you look at him battle, when you look at how he competes, when you look at how he finishes, like all those things are things that I think are super important. And really, I think part of what has made this offensive line so effective is not that they're the best athletes. It's like when you look at how Allegretti finishes, when you look at how Wiley finishes, when you look at how Cosmi finishes, when you look at how Biotis finishes, right? Those guys are grimy, nasty dudes that get down and dirty and finish the play to the whistle. And I think Wiley is a big piece of that identity. And so for me, again, Lucas has done a great job. Like he deserves all the credit in the world, but I think he has a role in that offensive line, which is to be the swing tackle. And when he comes in, he does a great job, which is exactly what we're looking for. But I think Wiley deserves a ton of credit, really.
Yeah, no, I think he does too. And I would just For multiple reasons, I would stick with Andrew Wiley. The one you just said is kind of the football reason. And then there's kind of the locker room reason of, unless a dude is doing something ultra spectacular, you don't really let a guy lose his job to injury. And so Wiley hasn't done anything that merits his losing his job. And so, yes, Big Luke had a fantastic game. I think he played really well at left tackle too when he was rotating with Brandon Coleman. But at the end of the day, like, Coleman's your future left tackle, Wiley's your starter, and upsetting the apple cart is not worth it because there's no real gigantic payoff there either way.
Right.
And so, you know, from the limitations too of what you can do from a mobility standpoint, some of your screen game, things like that, once Wiley's back out there as the better athlete, I think it is definitely worth, it's a good question, but the answer is...
It's a great question. I think also people are looking at it, and, you know, you can empathize with this, Craig. You see a performance like they had versus Tennessee, and you say, man... What was the difference there? And Lucas in for Wiley was one big difference, obviously. I think just the shift in mindset is also a thing that needs to be pointed out. But I understand why people are asking it. But I do think, like, for the reason you said, for the reason I just said, I think Wiley deserves that opportunity to keep that job.
Yeah. The other big difference was Tennessee decided to line up with like 7 yards in between all their dudes. And it made blocking pretty easy. And Brian Robinson was back. So that tends to help.
Weird move.
As well. Yeah. all right. As for speaking of the run game, but on the other side, got a couple of questions that I think are related. So I'm going to lump them together and give the shout outs to those who submitted them. Stephanie Lee responded to my prompt on Blue Sky. Said, hoping you can provide insight on why our defense is having trouble stopping the opponent's run game, even though it was better last week. And then this is a longer question from Daniel that I got via email that I think is related because it talks about like the defensive scheme and specifically the D-line. Hey, Craig, this is a question for the mailbag. One of the more pleasant surprises this season is the defense under Joe Witt with all the misfits he has dealt with from the past regime, i.e. Forbes, Jamin, Big Phil. Is it concerning that Duron has not had more impact this year? In spots, I have seen him cause pressure and eat up blocks to free others, but other than that, I have not heard his name in games this year. If he were consistently adding to the pass rush or is constantly in the backfield with TFLs, I wouldn't bat an eye, but is it getting to the point where I forget he is on the field? I'm not sure this is a system thing because he does not have to play more than 90% of the snaps as he did in years past. Obviously, system is a lot more than rotation, but I think the run game efficacy and Duron's performance are obviously tied. So what do we make of how Joe Witt Jr. is coached up this, and you know, all the other coaches that are involved in that, Daryl Tapp, et cetera, are coaching up this D-line and how they're performing right now?
Yeah, I think for me, the one thing that jumps out when you're watching film is there is a little bit of a personnel thing. Like when you watch teams that are really good at stopping the run, like I was watching, getting ready for the next show, I was watching the Saints and the New York Giants, right? And the New York Giants are not necessarily the best team in the world at stopping the run, but Dexter Lawrence was out. So they had this guy, Riley, who's in playing nose for them. And then all the other dudes on the interior, like these big dudes who understand how to like sit double teams and the structure of the defense, like they're playing a jam front. So it makes it really hard for the offensive line, specifically the three guys on the interior, to get double teams and combinations to the next level. In our nickel stuff, like where the Commanders are in a lot of four down stuff. And when you think about four down versus a 6-man blocking surface, you usually have the opportunity to get two really clean double teams on the interior. And the reason we're playing nickel is partially because we want kind of these two high coverage shells behind it. And when you get those, like you need a specific type of dude in there that's going to be able to split that double team and kind of sit a knee and be strong at the point. And you know, Jerzon's not really built that way. Jerzon does flash. Like when the double team's loose, he can penetrate it and make a play. Duron's the same way, but it is challenging. It's tough. And that, and the spacing of the front, I think you saw that versus Tennessee. Like, you know, Tavondre Sweat's one of the best, you know, by PFF metric, one of the best run stuffing defensive tackles in the NFL. Jeffrey Simmons is very disruptive. But in this game, I think you see how in the Tennessee game, you saw how difficult it was for them to be successful because of how they spaced their front. So sometimes like a defense is built for that defensive tackle to be successful and make a lot of plays. Then other times it's a little bit more challenging. And I think there's a little bit of a, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul scenario here in terms of like, you can't have everyone optimized all the time. You're basically looking for 80% efficiency from the entire defense. And right now, this four down spacing, putting a little bit more stress on those defensive tackles, to me seems like the right solution, you know, because again, you want to, the most important thing to me with this defense is eliminating explosive plays. And I'm actually okay if they can, if the other team runs the football a little bit, as long as they're not gashing you with like explosive runs, 10, 15 yard runs, which we haven't really had a huge issue of that this year. It's been death by a thousand paper cuts. The good thing about that is that at some point you're going to have a neutral run and you just got to maximize. And I think this defense has done a really good job of doing that. So that's kind of what I would say. It's, this is something that every four down spacing team has to deal with. That every team does, right? And when you go around and you watch a lot of football, the three technique gets double teamed, the shade gets double teamed, like all that stuff is what's happening. And you see it happening here with the Commanders. And I think that's part of the reason why they're having a hard time. And again, you can go out and you can find, you know, a big hulking nose to kind of sit in there and eat up those double teams. But those guys, because of how college football is, are becoming harder and harder to find.
Yeah, and it's also why like Carl Davis is maybe going to be playing over Phil Mathis slash was in the Tennessee game. And, you know, he played and like played pretty well. It wasn't a ton of snaps, but like he gets out there and shows some things. I think Sheldon Day has done a decent job of that this year at times. And like to Dan's credit and Adam's credit and Daryl Tapp's credit, like they know what they're looking for in that piece. And Dan's background as a D-line coach certainly helps. And so it doesn't have to be the flashy whatever guy. Like they know exactly what they're looking for, and they've gone and found the discount bargain bin versions of it. But maybe that is somewhere where they spend a little money or invest some more draft capital potentially moving forward to go with the quick penetrating type of Jerzon Newton, and then we'll see what they do ultimately with Daron Payne. I think part of the problem earlier in the year, and it's unfortunate for John, but like, you know, when you have John Allen, Daron Payne, and Jerzon Newton, like all three of those guys are like that. So you constantly have the undersized, you know, penetrating type, and that's tough. You need someone, those guys, to then do something that's not their best or their highest and best use. And so I think that was a struggle earlier in the year. I think the other thing I'll just say, add real quick, is like, if you need a stop late in the game, can you manufacture a stop? Like other, you know, think of like the end of the Baltimore game. And that's a tough example because Baltimore does this to everyone. But it also like shows you how hard it is, and especially against the best teams. But like if you're down late and you need to get a stop on, you know, three stops and then use your timeouts and then see what you can do with, you know, a minute left after you get the ball back after a punt situation, can you stop the run then? And that is, you know, luckily they haven't been in that position a ton this year. And it's always better to just avoid that position in the first place and just like get up early. And we've seen when the Commanders can do that, then they don't have a lot of stress late in games, which has been nice and is also very rare because blowout wins don't happen at the frequency that they've happened for Washington this year.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe a better point, is this team is built in a certain way as of right now. You know, when I was in Atlanta with Dan, like they were built to kind of play with the lead, you know, same thing with Dallas, like that defense is built to play with the lead, and there's value to that, right? There's value to kind of having, you know, pass rushing upside at all spots, like Daron, Jerzon, you know, the defensive ends are, their name's Fowler and all these guys, right? Luvu, those guys do a good job of being like kind of upside pass rushers. Are they the best on first and second down? No, but you've structured this defense with a vision, right? And I think that's okay, right? And I do think we also talked about this too, like how there are pieces and talent kind of missing from this equation. You know, Big Phil was supposed to be that guy for the Ron Rivera regime, right? And so has he lived up to that billing? He's flashed at points this year, but obviously the consistency isn't there for the staff. So I do think, again, this team is good. I think they're punching above their weight class. There's a lot of things to be excited about, but I think these are the types of questions where you say, hey, can we find somebody, you know, maybe a day three pick or a guy in the third round that has this skill set that can complement and supplement what we see in Jerzon and what we see in Daron. And I think that's the thing in fleshing out a roster. It's not always the top guys. It's the depth and role player pieces. You know, like I think John Bates is a great example of this. Like John Bates is maybe the best blocking inline, you know, Y in the NFL. And is he going to catch a ton of passes? No, but does he add value? Does he complement Ben Sinnott? Does he complement Zach Ertz in a nice way? Absolutely. And you need that guy on your roster, just like you need this. And it doesn't need to be, I think you made a great point with Sheldon Day. It doesn't need to be a big person. It just needs to be someone who understands how to stop the run from the interior defensive line spot. And it also, it works with the edge guys too. Like Fowler, I think, has been great. You know, I think unequivocally great, like in terms of his ability to rush the passer, his ability to find explosive plays in key moments, specifically on third and short situations. But he's not going to set a great vertical edge for you. So can you find somebody again? And I think when he was brought in, like his role was exactly what it is now. He's playing more snaps. So can you find somebody, hey, like, on first and second down, that's going to like dent that edge, make this thing a little bit harder. And again, those are long-term depth personnel decisions that kind of flesh this roster out.
Right. And Cleveland Furrell is supposed to be that guy. And he's been in and out of the lineup with some injuries this year and, you know, kind of been surpassed on the depth chart by Fowler because he's played so well. And obviously Dorrance is a consistent guy there. So, you know, they have some versions of that, but it's something that they'll continue to work on moving forward. Kind of last thing on this related topic. An email from Brett, who said, after the Philly loss, Logan talked about how there was a noticeable talent discrepancy, especially the push from the line. How do we combat that in our next go around with him? Really, this could apply to both lines of scrimmage. This could apply for the Commanders offensive line trying to push Jalen Carter around, and this can obviously apply for the group that we just talked about going against Jordan Mailata and company, which might be the best O-line in football, them or Detroit.
Yeah, and you didn't even mention Lane Johnson to speak how talented that group is.
I just picked one. Lane, you're awesome too.
You pick any of them, right? Lane and Dickerson, right?
Both Mailata and Lane Johnson, fantastic blockers, fantastic singers. Like they're multi-talented fellas.
Multi-talented. So I think watching the Tennessee game, because it was also something that happened in the Dallas game, right? And there was a specific type of player, specific style of player that seems to be giving them a hard time. And that's that penetrating kind of up the field three technique. I know Diggy Zua for Dallas kind of presented some similar stuff, specifically earlier in the game. And one of the things that I absolutely loved about the Tennessee game is they had a couple of answers for that type of player, which they had not shown prior to this or consistently prior to this season, right? They were like, oh, we're going to run trap. You trap penetrating three techniques. Like, look at our defense. Like, what hurts our defense? Trap and wham, right? Because our guys are penetrating vertical, one gap kind of guys. So versus Simmons, who is, again, one of the most disruptive run-stopping players in the NFL, we're going to trap him. We're going to wham him. And we're going to get big gashes off of that like teams have been gashing us. And the way they got to that, I love the setup, right? We kind of had, you know, this kind of Bates little motion in the backfield. We're going to run duo a couple times. We're going to run receiver lead a couple times. We're going to run wham a couple times. And I think that schematic element is something that gets me excited because, hey, now – Jalen Carter, you don't have to worry about, you can't just get up the field all the time because we're not always running bounce. We're not always running GT. We're not always running outside zone or whatever we're running, right? We're running something that's going to give you problems if you're not paying attention. And so I think those things are enough in a game plan to disrupt. So I love how they're already starting to think about how do we handle this penetrating three technique? And I think that's the thing is, we've talked about it on the defensive side of the ball a lot, but I think you see it on the offensive side of the ball quite a bit, is these little schematic elevations, right? Schematically, you're not going to change. You're not going to take a bad roster and make them good, but you can take a good roster and make them above average. And I think that's exactly what you're seeing here with some of these little tweaks, some of these little wrinkles. And I think you saw it last week versus Tennessee, which again, makes me excited offensively for combating that. For combating that Philly defense. And again, they're not going to give you a lot of different fronts. They're not going to give you a lot of different looks. They're not going to get they do what they do. They play a cover two shell. They get into quarters. They get into six. They do some man coverage, but they're not going to play eight man boxes. And that's how that team is built. So you kind of know what you're going to get. So if you can handle this one element, they're going to be in a much better spot. And then on the offensive side of the ball, I think if you get the support from the offense, if you get the support from the offense that we were expecting them to get, I think you look at that defensive performance and say, man, those guys flat got after Philly for three quarters, flat got after them. Yeah. And if they can give a similar performance and the offense can play, what would you say, Craig, 50% better, 75% better?
I mean, at least 50. Like that, the thing, the offense was so unproductive in that game that it's just you had no shot defensively, and you knew they were just going to wear down. And especially like Philly specifically wears teams down. Like I've watched more of them and been reading more stuff with them and kind of following them a little more closely, obviously, as they've gotten good in the back half of the season. And this week against Carolina is the first week in forever that they haven't had a Saquon 50-yard run at some point during the game. Like, not literally, but like some huge chunk play, like 30-plus yards, where especially in the second half, just that bit, you know, Lane Johnson, Landon Dickerson, all those guys that we talked about, Jordan Mailata, on down the list, like Mekhi Becton, like it's a big freaking dude. And they just lean on you, lean on you, lean on you, and they run the ball consistently, and Jalen's a threat in the run game. And eventually you just get tired, like physically tired, and you make either you just don't have the push or you make a mental mistake, and there goes Saquon for 60. And Carolina somehow survived that, in part because they were able to convert some first downs and like move the ball just enough, and they have a shot at the end if Leggett catches that ball. So I think, yeah, if you can just get even 50% better, nevertheless 75, to where you're converting some first downs, it's not as many three and outs, you've got a chance to hold up late in a way that you didn't have really a chance, even though you held the lead in the fourth quarter of the first game.
Yeah, 1,000%. So I think when you think about it as a complementary football type scenario, I think you feel pretty good about, I feel really good about the second matchup. If Cliff can continue to find ways to get, and talk about maybe the worst team, the worst defense to have on a short week, it's yes. got to be Philly, right? Because yeah, again, they kind of do what they do. Vic Fangio does a great job of kind of pulling from his Rolodex and saying, these are the defensive coverages we want to be excellent at. And they do a great job, you know? And so if you can find a way to increase your rushing efficiency on first down, which we just talked about how schematically they've already shown an ability to do that.
Also, B-Rob missed that game, didn't he?
Yeah, he missed that game. All right, no, he played that game, but only had like 10 snaps or something like that. He played the first quarter. Remember that? Remember he had a nice run in the first little bit there?
Oh, yeah. So like that, I mean, how different is this offense with B-Rob? Like that could be your 50% right there. It's just having him for the whole game.
Yeah, and so I think those types of, again, that little schematic elevation, finding a way, again, I feel very confident that Jaden, after seeing the defense, having a whole week of prep, well, again, there's a, you know, even if that's 25%, but I think that'll give you 50 right there. Having B-Rob kind of more consistently locked in with more efficient kind of third down execution in the game, like, even though the roster, again, compared to Philly, and most rosters compared to Philly, are quote-unquote under-talented, but this is where the kind of composition of the team, the coaching, the scheme is the stuff that kind of levels the playing field. And, you know, quite frankly, offensively, Philly, you know, say what you want about the offensive line, the running game. I mean, they threw the ball for, 108 yards or something last game?
Yeah, you add in like the sacks, it was like 80. But yeah, Jalen finished with 108 yards passing. He was awful.
And that's been the last 2 weeks. And again, that's something you've seen from him, even in our game, right? Not super efficient throwing the football. And so if the game flow flips, which they haven't had to deal with because their defense is playing so well, let's say they're down by 10, right? What does that look like for Jalen Hurts? I don't have a good answer. I would imagine not great because again, they're not built to do that consistently.
But that's fine for them most of the time because they're really good and they're not finding themselves down. The other two things for the rematch is I would hope that Cliff moves Terry around a little bit, gets him away from Kenyon Mitchell, which obviously he's shown that he was going to do that in the Tennessee game, and just a little bit goes a long way. And then Marshon Lattimore, you know, the man-to-man stuff on the outside, to just be able to play that and trust like, hey, Lattimore's got A.J. Brown. Like we're good there and see what that kind of effect that has. We'll be right back.